Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Rocket Mortgage. Confidence. Support for the Adam Carolla Show comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Why can't clients get approved in minutes, not weeks? Or make adjustments to their rate and term in real time? Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans answered those questions and more. It gives you the confidence to buy a home or refinance your existing loan. Fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. That's right. That's what Rocket Mortgage does. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, with Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. What else do you need to know? And again, these guys support the show and are great sponsors. So, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. To get started, just go to rocketmortgage.com/Adam. That's rocketmortgage.com/Adam.
Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, from the film Special Unit, Christopher Titus. With Gina Grad on news, Paul Bryan on sound effects, and a spirited round of What Can't Adam Complain About? And now, wishing you a happy Indigenous Peoples Day, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. I love that about you. We are going into year nine, I should say. Term football season, I count everything in weeks. Going into week two. All right, going into year nine, and it's all because of you. So thank you very much.
It's thanks, not.
Thanks for spreading the word around. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
And Bald Brian.
You yes. Can't begrudge from the begrave.
So much good stuff.
All right. Boy, life fascinates me, and especially how incredibly insane we are about certain facets of it and about how sort of just loosey-goosey or what have you we are with other facets of life, even within the same discipline. Like, you take something like football. Football is just practice, 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 to the point where when they do the extra point, the center fires it back. The guy holder snatches it, puts it down, boom. It's like it's clockwork. Now, they don't make it every time, but the motion is just practice, 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 do it in your sleep.
It's timed to the millisecond, quite literally. It's timed, but less than a few seconds.
Right. So I was at Sonny's football game.
Tackle?
No. Oh. I had to tackle my tongue from saying anything about playing flag football. Speaking of your tongue, just hold your tongue when you say flag football.
But then
that's
be
an
saying,
apt description.
Oh.
Okay. Now, I watched as he was included in none of the offense and snatched one flag.
He was a decoy?
Yeah. When you have a brown flag hanging out of your left pocket, that means you're Greco active.
You're
that's
indicating
how you know.
The team.
Yeah, I've seen cruising. I know how it goes with the flags. So he snatched one flag and was thrown 2-0 times, broke up no balls, and caught no passes and was handed the ball 0 times.
They're keeping the ball away from him. He took away one side of the field like Deion Sanders back in the day.
Yep, that's right.
That's the ultimate sign of respect to Sonny Island.
So I watched as they ran everything out of the shotgun, and I watched as the ball rainbowed, like an unlimited arc softball game. The center would snap it. The ball would go 5 feet higher than the quarterback's head, and
he'd make a Willie Mays-style basket catch of the ball.
Yes, right at the track. Like, he seriously, it was like floating in the air, like one Mississippi, two Mississippi, and then the quarterback would reach up with both hands and snatch it. By then, whoever was rushing got 2.5 steps closer to the quarterback, right. And the timing of the play, if you want to call it that, was always blown up, because the play was, snap the ball to the quarterback, I fake it to the running back, and the tight end goes out to the flat on the right. Well, the problem is I'm waiting for the ball to come down from the heavens. The running back is stutter-stepping, waiting for me to get the ball, and the guy already ran his pattern. He's out on the flat, and he's standing there.
It's hard to run a play-action fake when the guy's on top of you as the ball gets you.
Yes, and it's hard. Whether it's a screen pass or whatever, the guy's running out there, and he's in the open, but you don't have the ball yet. You've not received it from the center because it has to drop down like manna from the heavens. And I watched and I watched and I watched. It was like every single, and I kept saying to Lynette, it's really hard. They can never get off the ball. They can never execute the play if the snap is down there. Hey, Gary.
Yes, sir.
You got to look for the some of the snaps last drive only with the Green Bay Dallas game last weekend. There's especially one from the end zone cam, the opposite end zone cam, where you can see. So the ball's just rainbowing down. And I said, I kept saying to Lynette, Jesus Christ. And she's like, go talk to the coach after the game. And I'm like,
that's exactly what you should do.
I'm like, well, you know, she said, introduce yourself. Tell him you're Sonny's dad. And, it's funny. So I went over there and I was like, hi, I'm Sonny's dad. And the guy gave the reflexive, hey, Sonny's quiet. I'm like, don't worry about it. Like, we know.
We can dispatch with a charade.
We're moving him up to the booth next week. Like, he's not going to. Let's just keep moving here.
It won't be like Tony Romo in the booth. It'll be like, oh, that guy played?
Yeah. So he started with the reflexive. Hey, Sonny's quite a coming. Now, let's get to the snapping. What is going on? And he's like, we tried, we can't. And the reason I bring this up, and I don't like to talk about myself.
Oh, come on. Just once.
I did it in high school, and there was never an issue. There was just never an issue. I think when I was in my junior year, I just snapped the punts and the extra points. But I think my senior year, we decided to put the shotgun in, and I worked on it a little bit. It's a little different because the punt is two hands and head between the legs.
That's right. Long snapping. That's when you're like, really throwing it.
Your specialty.
Shotgun is one hand and head up. So you're not looking at the guy you're snapping it to. And he's standing six yards behind.
And the shotgun is when the quarterback is taking the ball as opposed to a kicker. And the quarterback's like, 4 yards behind. He's about to throw it or hand it off or do something with it.
Is that the one where the guy's like basically right up inside you? Or
that's under center. That's like when you're ready to take the snap.
Thank you, Brian. Well, I never know. No, I mean it. I don't know if we can get this far off.
All right, so you got to hike the ball. Center's got to hike the ball and start the play.
That's what I think.
Quarterback's either under center, hand in the butt, like ready to grab the ball, or he's about 4 yards behind, like with the hands up in the air saying, throw it to him. Hike it to him. Okay. So that's the shot.
And that you're not looking, you're forward, and you got to do it one-handed.
You can get glance, but you're not heads up to the leg.
It takes a little faith, and that's why you have to practice it. But once... I know it's not difficult because I did it all the way through high school, and that's about the only thing we did well, is not screw up that exchange. We never completed the pass once he got the ball, and we never made a first down, but we never screwed that up. I never snapped it over his head. I never hit him in the ankles and had the ball go squirting down the field. There was none of that. And then I watched the 11-year-olds do it, and I thought, Coach, I know it's a big problem, and that's why you have to take the kid, and you need to just pull him aside, and you just go, look, today, this is all we do. It's going to be boring. Mm-hmm. We're going to do 200 of these. Just get the ball, get down, get comfortable. I'll slap my hands. Memory. You snap it. Mm-hmm. And you start snapping. And if you're rainbowing it, we're going to correct this. And then after never doing it again, now, to be fair, I would monkey around and do the long snapping in the hallway of the man show and stuff like that, because it was just fun doing long snapping in the hallway of the man show. But I never did the shotguns snaps again. They're sort of boring. It's not that fun to do, and there's no call for it once you get into construction, once you get into radio. Really? Yeah, not a lot of shotguns.
Shotgun snap me that tape measure there, Adam.
Not a lot. And then I went with Steven when I was doing my home improvement show, and we went and tried out for the Avengers, and I snapped it, and the coach, who didn't know who I was, asked if he wanted to sign me as their shotgun snapper. So that's when I was 40, and it's not that hard. It just isn't that hard. It's a little harder with pads, like a helmet and shoulder pads, than it is just in a t-shirt. Mm-hmm. But I did it with helmet and shoulder pads. It's not that big an issue. And I watched all the NFL highlights on Sunday night, and I'm seeing it's like, oh, and now they're on the 4-yard line, and the Chiefs are marching down to score, and the ball is snapped at the guy's ankles, and he's picking the ball up off of the ground. And as I was watching the Packers drive down the field, every single snap, and they must have a new snapper in there, Gary, every single snap floated back and was at his shins. Like, it was just super low and slow, like end over end, not drilled. And the difference between whipping it back and putting it on his right ear on his throwing arm and doing a lazy, like, slow whatever in that league is everything. Yeah. And I couldn't figure out if they had a new guy. I saw they shot one picture from the end zone, and they showed the ball tumbling backwards. And I just thought, yeah, practice. You're professionals. This is all you do. Like, pull this dude aside and just go, we're going to do 100 of these. Like, we're watching the film. The ball is trickling back to his ankles. It's such a weird thing. It happens on almost every team. Especially when the quarterback is Philip Rivers size, like you got your 6'5", 6'6", your Ben Roethlisberger, and these guys are pulling the ball off their ankles. They're looking down to field the ball, essentially. Their timing play is interrupted now because they're pulling the ball off their shins. And with the speed of the guys who are rushing on the outside, the amount of time it takes that ball to flutter back and for him with a minute and 10 seconds to drive down the field, pull it off his shins times 7 snaps in a row. It's weird, right? Like, why isn't the coach just going, hey, you big guy over here, we're just today, this is what we're doing. This is all we're doing. Like, we're just going to stand here. We don't need the quarterback. I'll be the quarterback. Yeah. I'll just stand here. I'll yell it out. You whip it back. We're not going anywhere until you're comfortable throwing a spiral, not fluttering it back, and not putting it at my shins, putting it at my chest.
Gary can investigate as to what happened to their... my first thought is this is not their normal center. This is a converted guard or someone because of an injury during the game. Or number two, this is late in the fourth quarter and they're driving to win the game. He's probably involved in 70, 75 offensive plays at this point, 70, 75 collisions. Maybe he had a little banged up hand or wrist. I mean, this was not the makings of a normal, you know, snap it back there, you know.
I don't see him knock. I see the guys who do it well and the guys that don't, and there seems to be no drop off from the first quarter to the last quarter. It must be a different dude. That's what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. In which case, I will now say, let's get the starting center and his backup, and we're going over here and we're going to do 1,000 of these snaps. Because
it appears that is their starting center, Corey Lindsey.
Oi.
Why is it floating? Why is the ball tumbling? And where do you see the end zone shot? It tumbles back to his ankles.
He had to have been banged up because their team, like Green Bay, runs out of the shotgun all the time. They're a passing team. Aaron Rodgers is one of the best quarterbacks in the league, so this cannot be their normal.
But right? If you watch the game highlights, just the Sunday night game highlights, you will see plenty of stuff. And not like, here's a montage of bad snaps. Now it's fourth and one, and Phillip Rivers got to convert. And it's like, the ball's on his ankles. Like, it just should never happen. Yeah. In a world where 1,000% of the punt snaps are drilled into the punter's chest 15 yards back, and I mean drilled into his chest, like, looks like somebody threw an overhand speedball and just hit him right in the chest. When 100% of that, 99.7% of those snaps are drilled into the guy's chest, And 96.7 of the extra point field goals are drilled right into the guy's hands who's taking a knee. Why are so many of these things fluttering back?
To that point, you really rarely see a bad snap on special teams these days. It's really rare.
Because that guy...
It's his only job.
All he does is do that and occasionally bang Pam Anderson.
Oh, wow. That's a good gig.
Yeah, the guy who did it in San Diego for a million years.
There's
was 32
teams. There's 32 teams, Gina. So it's not that good of a gig.
Hey, man, she's feeling charitable.
All right, I'll keep you up to that. But I'm outraged. This podcaster's outraged. All right, let me tell you about Audible, man. Audible's selection of Audible books is unmatched anywhere. Millions of Audible members access performances by A-list celebs and amazing narrators like me and our own Mike Dawson, man.
Thank you. A-list.
A-list, man.
You are on A-list.
That's on A-list, exactly.
On A-list. Do not resuscitate. That's the list, man. In addition to audiobooks. Thank you, baby.
Yeah.
There are so many audio exclusives, original audio shows. Try it on your commute ride with Audible. It's just the best way to get smart. You know, you feel dumb sitting in traffic, waiting in line, whatever it is you're doing, pop in the earbuds and get the Audible, man. Start a 30-day trial, and your first audiobook is free. Go to audible.com/ace. Try it out for free. Audible.com/ACE. Let's get smarter. Let's grab our books here and let's check it out.
Get smarter by listening to Mistrial. Learn all about our criminal justice system.
Absolutely. The great Mark Garagus. All right. I heard the ultimate, I think. I'm glad Max Pattis entered the fray here. I can see him through the glass.
Is he top of his head?
He knows about music. That's right. I was driving over to Chris Morgan's house on Saturday night, watch Willie T, Doc, and talk a little Fast and Furious. And the song that came on the radio, I thought, this could be the ultimate Tool tune.
Ooh.
But I can't remember if it was discussed or not. Brian says no.
No.
Dawson says no.
Not on this show.
I tend to believe them, and I think this may be a top five Tool tune.
Dawson, do you have room to play it? Okay, I got it. Here we go. Starting off strong.
Yeah.
How about strong and weak?
Right out of the gate.
Timeless.
This is the London Royal Philharmonic.
That's where they put the Casio super far. Yeah,
different levels, too. One's got to be up, one's going to be down.
Now remember, you have to not want to change the channel. You have to want to turn it up. And you have to be mortified if a black person comes near the car and the window's down. That's kind of the real criteria.
You mentioned this is Survivor?
Yeah, Survivor, yes.
This is their song, Not Eye of the Tiger?
Right. I know the songs Dawson likes, though.
I've front and backsold this on the radio.
Front and back sold. We might get a chance to recreate your youth in a second. Now, Max Patti, you don't know this song, do you? They do Street and the Heat.
I think this checks every box.
I like it, and I know it's Tool tune-y. Like, I am embarrassed as hell that I...
The only thing that might hold it back was not a big enough hit. Like, do people know this song if it's blasting out of your car? Like, Eye of the Tiger, people know the song.
But I think this is so bad that it surpasses
it. It makes up for that.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah.
It was a hit. I don't know if it was top... Probably top 10. You got to look it up, Gary.
This is the part of the concert where people are leaving because they're not playing Eye of the Tiger again.
Oh, no. If you're seeing Survivor, it's this and Eye of the Tiger. Those are the only two.
Now, what people would say, this came out, I think, after Eye of the Tiger, and they said, no, they're actually a really good band. Have you heard that song, High on You? They can do other stuff.
Begging for a touch.
Chris, this is called The Hook.
He's High on You reached number 8 in mainstream rock.
Ten.
Eight.
I like that he's begging for a touch in the middle of the street. Like, I'd like a handy, even if we get run over. So, Dawson, you're with me. This is Tool Tune.
Totally. This is 100%. This is the quintessential Tool Tune.
I love the steady, unimaginative drum beat.
The drummer for Survivor is listening right now. Single teardrop.
She's steady as she goes.
We're back for more. Right about now, picturing pulling up to a crowded bus stop at a red light, windows down.
Yeah.
I'm starting to sweat.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's getting comfortable.
No, if I'm to be honest, I would never switch this song if it popped on my 80s channel.
Oh, yeah.
I would turn it up, but I would fear for my life if I thought other people, even certain members of the elderly community, could hear this song. I would fear for my life.
If you get to your destination, but you can't get out of the car, you got to listen to this song.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a driveway song.
Now you're talking about, do you leave the engine running for the air conditioning? Or?
All right, you guys, I don't know, let's vote on this one, but I have it top 5 Tool Tune.
Oh.
Yeah,
top
because
5.
Well, because you can't be
bold.
It can't be the best song. It's got to be a song that you would never change and would be horrified if somebody heard you rocking out to this in the parking lot.
Yeah. I deem it a Tool Tune. People forget Tool Tune's not bad songs. If a bad song comes on and you like it, that's a guilty pleasure. Mm. Tool Tune's at heart a good song, and I think this fits the criteria.
Yeah. Gina?
It's catchy, but you know why I'm surprised you like it so much? It doesn't go anywhere.
No,
I thought
it
had that Bruno Mars quality you hate so much. But it is 100% a Tool Tune.
No, Bruno Mars is 5 different songs that were created before he was born that he cobbled together loosely, and that's why I don't like that. This is just a candy-filled nothing beat that just kind of plots along that is good if you just fell in love with a chick with big hair, but bad if you just got divorced. You want to back sell it? You want to front sell it?
Both.
You want to front and back sell it? We got to do the beginning.
He
got to do the top.
He needs a post count.
You want the intro?
Give me the top. I'll work the post.
All right. Here we go.
Another Monday afternoon, and you are tuned to 95.7. We'll call it Max FM. We're kind of like Jack FM, but we lean gay. My name is Dawson. Got some Bee Gees coming up in this 30-minute set. Let's keep rocking with Survivor. I'm High on You.
Wow, that's a pro.
Well done.
That's a pro.
That's an old radio bowl for you.
Wow, we got to do a segment, Gary. It's the front cell with Mike Dawson.
And the back cell.
And the back cell.
Give away some tickets.
All right, folks, we're going to get a little bit higher in just a few minutes because I do got tickets for Rip and Roar in action at the Coliseum coming up this weekend. That's right, the Monster Truck Showdown. And if you're listening to this station, you're probably wondering, do I really want to go to Monster Trucks? Yes, you do, because the first ever gay 4x4 will be there with Big Brad Bodine. Give me a call at 800-957 Max FM. I'm Dawson. Right back.
Yeah, well, I'll feel for it. Yeah,
this is the next song.
Clearly,
we've got.
There's no post on that song. That is the toughest song to front sell. You don't step on that one at all.
Great.
All right, Dawson. Once a week, I want a front sell from you. You got to come up with a Tool tune. Be nice to start with the Tool.
Right.
Go to the toolbox. And, that's the name of the station, the Toolbox. That's a new format on Sirius XM.
KTOL.
The Toolbox, and you front sell. All right.
Can do.
All right.
I'm going to dig up some Night Ranger for next time.
Please.
Yes.
It'd be nice. All right. And Dawson, it is correct that I know the songs you like and don't like, right?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. Good. Great man. All right, let's see. Titus is coming in. We have some What Can Adam Complain About? I'll tell you about Simply Safe first. Ah, I understand why someone may put off getting the home security system to slimy sales guys, a long-term contract, expensive installations. Why bother? You get the best protection And it's so easy. You do it with Simply Safe Home Security. S-I-M-P-L-I, Simply Safe. Dawson has it. August has it. I have it. You go online, you put your system together. You only need a sensor for the front door and the slider in the back and a couple fire smoke detectors, maybe a couple keypads. I'm going to put one in the garage or one in the master bedroom. Peel and stick, boom. Batteries last up to 10 years. No drilling, no crawling around under the house, no pulling wires. Just order it online. Set it up in an hour. A home and family are going to be protected 24-7 to get 10% off. 10% off. Go to Simply Safe Adam. SimplySafe.com/Adam. That's SimplySafe.com/Adam. And also, you can get it at Best Buy if you like. All right. We'll do what can Adam complain about. First, I will see you guys in Minneapolis and Nashville. That'll be this Friday. And then Saturday, Nashville at the Polk Theater. Is it? Where I'm looking up there.
Yeah.
Yep. Polk Theater and Minneapolis at the Music Hall this Friday. Saturday, come on out, say hi, and me and Mike will be there, and we'll sign some autographs, take some pictures out in the lobby after, and all sorts of good stuff. All right, we got the intro?
Stuff. The world is full of it, and one man can complain about it all. This is What Can't Adam Complain About?
All right, I'm going to just hop to the top.
Some good ones up
and
there.
I'm going to talk to Deuter.
Hey, man.
Hey, 44, Minneapolis. Off. Hey, I'm going to see you on Friday.
Yep, I'll be there.
Good.
We'll all be here.
Hey, what's up? what can Adam complain about?
Beer.
Beer.
Can't complain about beer.
Okay. Beer.
You brew your own.
Yeah.
You sell your own.
I brew it. I consume it. I love it. Couple things. When you travel with people like Mike August, who inexplicably like Corona, and I think they do it just to aggravate you, they'll always ask twice when you're at the airport bar. They go, "Do you have a Corona?" And they go, "No, we don't have Corona." So no Corona? Like, I don't know why people do that in their life. You think that waitress is going to pull one out from behind her back?
Oh,
aha!
Corona!
You asked the magic two times.
Yes, yes.
She looks around. Don't tell anyone.
Yeah, yeah. You ask three times and a huge black man shows right up to kill you. So there's that. There's also, I can be bugged by people liking the wrong beer. I will get bugged by
finally,
people.
Someone said it.
By people drinking something over like they prefer the Corona over the Pizza Port or like, the Stone or whatever it is.
Right. Like
it,
the artisan.
It bothers me. Yeah. I now realize it's sort of like porn on the internet. There's too much good and I'll never be able to experience all of it.
No matter how much you might try, no matter how much you commit yourself.
Right, right. Also, I think we need to figure out the on tap versus in the bottle. I love the on tap, sure. But so many times they'll tell you we have this, that, and that, and I go, "Oh, you have it? Oh, that's in the bottle." Mm. Like there's a move where you think it's on tap, but it's not on tap; it's in the bottle. I'd like that to be worked out. Also, the people, the animals who take one or two draws off the beer and then set it down and then leave the party or leave the football Sunday or whatever it is, those people drive me insane.
That beer's a commitment. It's a social contract.
Right.
Finish your beer.
Finish your beer. That's right. That's right. I don't care what's going on. Finish your beer. The biggest hero was the guy in the Vegas massacre who was standing defiantly holding his 16 ounces, holding his tall boy and a single and finger out to the shooter. Yeah. That guy's
defiant.
That's a finish your beer guy.
Yep.
I've had guys not finish your beer just because like the phone rang and I went like, "Oh, my wife wants me to pick up," and then they leave.
Next thing you know.
This is shots fired.
That's right.
Never spilled an ounce of that beer. That man is a hero, and he should get a contract with whatever beer company. Was it Budweiser, Bud Light, or whatever?
It was either Miller Lite or Bud Light.
A
it was
blue can,
He should do that. Now, and I don't like to go here, but one of the things I am happy about, I went to Sonny's football game on Saturday. I was meeting Lynette over there at the Glendale Park over there where he's playing about 5 o'clock. I was at the shop. She was coming from somewhere else. I threw a couple IPAs in my pocket and brought them over to us. Yeah, I got to take the – watching your son – not touched a ball for 60 minutes.
Takes a lot out of you.
I got to take the edge off. You know what I mean? And so I handed her beer, and she entered, and she said, are we allowed to do this? And I said, it doesn't matter anymore because there's so many goddamn sports drinks now, and there's so many, oh, this has jojoba root in it, and there's so many millions of cans. When I was growing up, it's like Coors or Bud, and you better have your hand over that label because we would never mistake it for a Coke, a Pepsi, or a 7-Up. Now, it's infinity.
I defy you. Infinity
for how many sports drinks, carbonated, whatever,
Rockstar,
health
Monster,
drink, energy drink, whatever. You go ahead and you crack that 16-ouncer and you drive right down the highway at noon and drink with confidence. Confidence and impunity.
Maybe we should.
Confidence meets impunity.
Meets
oak tree. That's variety. That's what I'm saying. Variety meets confidence meets impunity because growing up, you could not crack a cold one in the car. If the popo was around, you could see that Bud can from outer space.
A beacon
that could be seen from other planets.
Come get me, cops.
Now all you do is get some off-brand IPA that nobody recognizes and sit and drink at the park and watch your son miss flags with pride and impunity. Thanks, Dieter.
I agree. Hi.
Thank you. All right, let's see.
What can't Dieter laugh
about? We had a litany of complaints, by the way.
Will, 28, what's going on, Maine?
Hey, guys.
What's going on?
Well, I think I got a good one for you.
Let's hear it.
How about Lynette has gone, taken the kids, and Olga has gone wherever she goes, and you're home alone, and you're feeling like rubbing one out?
One.
Ladies, you can always tell what precedes that activity is the just because phone call. You know, hey, hon.
Hey.
Where are you?
I'm just picking some things up.
Oh, okay. How many things?
Oh, God, I probably have 4 or 5 errands to do.
Uh-huh. Are you at the beginning of the errand
day? Just started.
Oh, just started?
Yes.
Oh,
I have a long afternoon ahead of me.
I mean, okay. Or interesting. Or so what?
Why do you ask?
Nothing. So when do you think you're coming in?
You know, it's actually going to be a long day. I got to go all the way to West Hollywood.
Great. I mean, who cares?
What?
All right. So ballpark, 5 o'clock?
Oh, at earliest.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 5:30.
Great. Awesome. Hey, when you're leaving, just give a ring.
Okay. Are you going to make sure that the house is nice and spick and span? Or?
Yeah, I say that. As a matter of fact, just call and just let it ring once and hang up. That'll be our I love you.
Okay.
That'll be our signal.
Are you
our
sure?
Our secret I love you signal.
Do you need me home earlier? Just
No. Take your time.
Okay.
Take your time. Yeah, take the scenic route.
Oh.
Hey, when you're pulling up, just give a toot on the horn.
The horn was acting up, so that you wanted me to just make sure it works.
Just a toot on it. Okay. I want to greet you at the garage there.
You are the sweetest.
Just the toot.
Okay.
All right.
See you around 6.
6?
Yeah.
You sure 6?
Maybe 6:15.
Okay.
If I get stuck in traffic, maybe 7, but I swear I won't be home any later.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We'll see you then.
Okay.
All right.
Love you.
Yeah. Give the call. Just let it ring once.
Okay.
That'll be the sign. And then toot on the horn.
All right.
That'll be it. Okay. And listen, it's been really humid, so if I'm covered with sweat and a little out of breath, that it's just because it's like almost East Coast conditions.
Oh, honey, I get it. We'll get the HVAC guy out soon.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Okay. All right, see you then. All right.
Bye.
All right. Wait a minute. Will? Wait, is Will on? I'm sorry. Will?
I'm here.
Yeah. Oh.
Can you hear me?
Complain about.
Huh?
Yeah.
So in that situation.
Let me tell you this about, I'm trying to think of like modern man. If you took the time he spent perusing porn when the wife was gone. And by the way, wives, if they call you and you're in Maui with the kids, the answer should always be, when am I going to be home? I will burst through the front door in 14 minutes. Go. And then just hang up. Because that'd be the biggest favor you could ever do this guy.
Yeah.
Because if you took, I'm trying to think, one day we had to get the Cato Institute to tabulate all this. Time spent, time squandered on fantasy football versus time in front of the computer just endlessly staring at porn.
Right. Or, as they call it on the league, roster baiting.
Yeah.
When you masturbate to your own lineup.
Yeah. So some of us manage to do both at the same time.
Right. Yeah. So it is a huge time suck.
Oh, my God.
Pardon the pun. And that's why any guy should just literally. Now, we figured out, we came up with a plan for this, right?
What was it?
It was something like.
I'll give
you the over under on how long you can look for porn on your computer before you're
locked out.
You're locked out of your computer and you're locked out for 2 hours or something.
It's awesome with the very ambitious ratio of like an hour of searching versus a minute of being locked out.
Right.
Something like that.
Yes. The scale was you can have 20 minutes, but if you can't get it done in 20 minutes, you're going to be locked out for like 3 hours or something. And you had to agree to whatever it was.
Yep.
Or you could have 30 minutes, but if you got locked out, you'd be locked out for 5 hours or whatever it is. Dawson proclaimed he wanted unlimited time searching and zero lockout time.
That's fair.
Hey, listen, if a genie offers you wishes, use the first one on your unlimited wishes.
It's a hypothetical. I believe those numbers are valuable.
All right. I hope you get brought up on charges one day, and the judge says, look, you can either cooperate fully and do 6 months in county and 1 year probation, or you do 5 years and you announce, how about I do no time and a new Cadillac?
Yeah,
I'll
have
do
an idea.
A minimum of no jail time.
Yeah. I just want to be in the courtroom for the proclamation.
I have an idea.
All right. So, Will, it's the thousands and thousands of man hours lost every year to this. Oh, yeah, there we go. Thank you. All right, one more. Let's see. Let's talk to Jeff, 40, Kansas City.
Ooh.
Hey, Bald Gina, what's up?
Wearing my Jayhawks hat right now.
She is.
Hell yeah. All right, you can't complain about dads, stay-at-home dads who do everything, including audio video. I'm taking a break from running my chipper to install my washer and dryer that my wife just bought. And I'm sorry, just now I have to pick up my daughter off the bus.
Here's how I can complain.
Hold on.
Go ahead.
I don't know how much your wife appreciates it or if she ever verbalizes that, but based on my own loose experience of fixing and doing and paying for everything, I'm guessing it's somewhere between zero and minus zero.
It's
a narrow window.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Because whoever you live with, the way women are wired is they'll just, look, here's your wiring as a woman.
Put that bitch back on the bus.
Brian.
Your wiring as a woman is to go, what is he not good at? So if you're living with the guy who fixes everything, who does everything, who can, you have no idea the luxury of, oh my God, the toilet's running or overflowing and it's Saturday, 10 o'clock at night. We don't have to open the phone book and call Joe Reuter to come, like, this guy will handle it. Or the lights are gone, the breaker's bad or whatever. This guy will handle it. Like, this guy will just do, he'll put a bunk bed up for the kids. He'll, a piece of furniture from IKEA, he'll snap it together in no time. Like, you immediately go, oh, that's just what that guy does. And you move on to, look, everyone's guilty of this, but the people you live with don't appreciate it for 10 seconds. Anyone. I've had roommates the exact same way. Like, they're just, that's what he does. Moving on.
It's the hallmark of any long-term relationship.
It is.
It's not taken for granted.
It's a cornerstone of anything. But having these guys that are, especially in Hollywood, that are utterly worthless, just totally and utterly worthless around the house, it's not neither here nor there that you're living with a dude who can hook every, it's like the washer and dryer are going to arrive around between 1 and 3 on Friday. And then the guy who can hook it up is coming Tuesday. Right. No, the guy who can hook it up lives there and he'll have it done by Friday late afternoon. That is the best. Or with with Lynette, 1,000 times, like her car tires got a leak or whatever. It's like, drive to the shop, put it on the hoist, pop the tire off, send the tire out to Western Tire, get the tire plugged, filled, put back up while she's doing her podcast, and then right back down on the ground. Like, having that, just
that's
having
service,
just having
that's incredibly helpful.
Yeah.
Just convenient and helpful and useful.
But never discussed.
Yeah.
It just is. It just is. I don't blame her. It's human nature. It's like, it's how it all works. But you don't realize that having a shop filled with tools and hoists and, like, literally, it's like your car's doing something. Just drop it off. Tell Tom to fix it. You go in and do this. He'll fix it, and then you get back into it.
Well, maybe she uses the blanket theory like I do sometimes is, oh, he loves doing that kind of stuff.
He'd be doing something like that anyway.
He loves it.
People do a lot of that. And the reality is
vacuuming.
I get something out of doing it, but not 90% of it. 90% of it is demo and mess and arguing with people and going
pulling
on
permits.
Runs and pulling permits and buying pieces. Like,
it's
no.
not fun. It's satisfying
no,
at the end.
It's satisfying it's at fun. The end, but the process is not fun. Jeff, you get no praise for what you do?
Oh, zero. Totally taken for granted.
Right.
Yes.
Now imagine.
You're absolutely right. Our joke is, what do normal people do? Because, like, the washer and dryer she ordered came with a quote-unquote installation. And the guy, they did manage to bring it downstairs. And they just looked at me, and I looked at them, and they're like, you got this, right?
Right.
I'm like, of course I've got this, but do I have to get it, or do we already pay for it?
Right.
You and they just left.
Of course, what exacerbates the whole thing, Jeff, is we're both comedic geniuses who are millionaires.
Yeah, so imagine both of your pain.
You can really commiserate.
My pain is that the comedians are the most useless people on the planet. You can't compare me to a guy who makes $47,000 a year and drives a UPS truck. You got to compare me to Gilbert Godfrey.
Oh, Lord.
This is a tough day to have Titus in, the guy who wrenches on cars.
Oh, yeah.
It's a tough day.
Titus flying in the face of my last statement. Chris Titus, one of our favorites, he's here. Let's get out.
That was What Can't Adam Complain About?
Titus is here. I think what we'll do is we told him we'd play a little clip from Van Jones, who was in here just a little bit ago, but we're sort of sitting on it. Yeah, very easy on the eyes and easy on the ears as well. He's got a book called Beyond the Messy Truth. Why don't we listen to 10 minutes of Van Jones, just the top of the Take a Knee podcast. You can subscribe to that. Check it out over there at Podcast One and get the Podcast One Premium. Mm-hmm. Yep, and get the whole archives. Get all the Take a Knees, all the inspirational podcasts, but the entire archive of this show, which as we figured out is more than 2,000 episodes. Yeah. All right, so let's listen to a little Van Jones. Van Jones in studio. Good to meet you, Van.
Good to meet you too, brother.
Beyond the Messy Truth, how we came apart, how we came together. Available now as we speak. Available now. And you can get it on Amazon, and you can check out Van's website as well, vanjones.net. That is .net. Thank you for coming in.
Yeah, glad to be here. Yeah, how we came apart and how we come together. I think those are probably the two biggest subjects in the world right now.
Yeah. it's crazy.
Yeah.
So this, and we'll get into everything in this podcast, but this podcast is mainly about you, your path, your journey, how you started, how you got to where you are today, how you're brought up, and those who influence you. So let's just start at the beginning. You were born, your parents did what and where?
Well, I was born in 1968. Which is the year they killed Bobby Kennedy, they killed Dr. King. My dad was actually born in 1944 in Memphis, and he was in Memphis when Dr. King was killed. So I grew up in the rural South, edge of a small town. Because my dad had been born in segregation and poverty, he joined the military. When everybody else was running out, my dad ran in to get out of poverty, put himself through college, married the college president's daughter, my mother, because my dad kind of had it like that. And then put his brother through college, put his cousin through college. He worked with my mom to put me and my twin sister through college. And basically, he got our entire family out of poverty just, you know, through sheer effort and force of his will. Also, the NAACP had to sue our county for him to be able to become a principal. They gave him the worst, to retaliate, they gave him the worst junior high school in our county, and he turned it into the best in the state. So my dad was just one of these guys, just kind of hard to stop. I was his, you know, first and only son. And when I got accepted to Yale for law school, I decided I wanted to be a civil rights guy. I wanted to kind of be a give back guy like my dad had been. And wound up working on every issue you can imagine in tough urban environments. And I really learned, you know, from my dad that, you know, the liberals get it wrong. The conservatives get it wrong. If you really are trying to deal with tough urban issues, you got to be the most conservative person and the most liberal person at the same time. You got to be a liberal to fight for these programs and some, for real opportunity. But then once the kids get the opportunity, you got to be a drill sergeant. You got to be like the most conservative human ever born to get the young people to show up on time, to do what's right, to take responsibility. So we need each other. Part of the reason I wrote this book is that we've just gotten away from the fact that you've got to have strong liberal ideas and strong conservative ideas working together to get anywhere. And so I wrote the book, you know, just in some ways in honor of my father. He died in 2008. That kind of just common sense seems to have completely escaped the country. I don't know where it went, but it's not available anymore in either party.
Well, we've turned into like weird sports fans where we just pick a team.
Yep.
And once you pick a team, that's your team. And if somebody on your team is accused of rape, you say, you argue vehemently that they shouldn't be suspended for the season because it was her fault.
Right.
And if somebody on the other team's running back is accused of rape, you argue vehemently that he should be thrown out of the league.
For the death penalty.
Right? And never let back, never strap on cleats again. And so you're thinking, and you're watching all this, and you're going, now, wait a minute. We just heard you arguing about your guy not missing a game and arguing for the other guy to be thrown out of the league. And they go, it's a totally different. And you go, no, it's not. It's just your team and their team. And yeah, whatever, you can root for a team, but at least be consistent.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can be partisan and also have principles. And
that's,
and it used to be that way. I mean, the idea that now, like you said, if you're a Democrat, you have to pretend that Hillary Clinton is, you know, a walking goddess who's never done anything wrong. Or if you're a Republican, you know, that Donald Trump is doing a fantastic job. You couldn't improve in any way. That is, you know, we're flunking kindergarten here at this point. I mean, you wouldn't want your kids to have that kind of attitude about their friends or about their school or about their neighborhood. And so, I mean, that's part of why, you know, I'm on CNN. I'm proud progressive, you know, left side of Pluto. But, you know, I work with Newt Gingrich on opioid issues, on criminal justice issues, because some of these things are just common sense American issues that while we're fighting about stuff we're never going to agree on, we forget that the 80% of stuff we do agree on, we can get something done about.
Well, is it fair to say that, you know, the two things you learned from your dad, your family, your mom, your upbringing is the playing field is not level, especially back then.
Sure.
But super hard work and big quads and glutes can get you up that field, even though it might be tilting down and not in your direction. Sort of simultaneously.
Yeah, I mean, it turns out that two things can be true at the same time.
Right.
That you can have an unfair society, which I think that we do, and that you shouldn't use that as an excuse not to be world-class excellent in every way you possibly can be. That's how I was raised. And so then, you know, you then have the opportunity to lift as you climb. I got a chance to go to one of the best law schools in the world. When my father died, the picture that they put on the funeral program is my father standing in front of Yale Law School with his hands in the air, just so proud that his son had been able to get there, considering he grew up literally in a shotgun shack. Now, did he have to go against unfair things? Did the NAACP have to come to our county and literally file a lawsuit to give him a shot to be a principal? Yes. But once he got that shot, the lawyers went home, and he had to produce kids who could go on to high school and to college, and he did that. And so that's the country that you live in. It's not fair, never been a fair country in the world, but you got a better shot here than any place else. let's work hard on the fairness part, that's the liberal part, but let's also work hard on the personal responsibility and excellence part, which has now become a conservative thing. And it's totally nuts to me that we split it this way. When you used to have the Jack Kemps of the world fighting for justice, and you used to have liberals like Bobby Kennedy sticking up for individual responsibility, the whole thing now is totally dysfunctional, and that's why I wrote the book.
Yeah, it is. It's weird. It's weird when we're arguing against things we know. It's sort of like arguing against personal responsibility and family and education. It's like it's like a nutritionist arguing against exercise and nutrition.
Right.
Like it's insane. I didn't even know that was up for debate.
Right.
You know, stay together, take care of your own, take care of your family, focus on education, get them to the next level. It's insane that that's something we're arguing over. But again, we will argue over everything. I've now really realized, somebody, you come out with an e-cigarette so people can give up smoking, and then we have a big argument over e-cigarettes, and then we got to get e-cigarettes banned. It's just if somebody comes out with something, somebody's going to pipe up.
I think especially in the kind of social media landscape as well. Sometimes, I mean, I've seen now the mainstream media will elevate some complete idiot, some total lunatic, maybe even a bot. It may not even be a human being. But they say something online and it starts to get any traffic or momentum. We'll take it from out of like the social media gutter and put it right in the middle of the conversation as if some fool with a Twitter account, I don't mean the somebody elected, I just mean there's like a random person with a Twitter account, is equal to and should be heard from as much as people who actually, I don't know, have a job or have some responsibility or have a considered opinion. And so I think we have to actually work a lot harder. I think that most Americans right now, I don't care if you're red state or blue state, black, white, Latino, whatever the thing is, I think people feel very insecure right now. I think there's a lot of change that's just coming. It's like it used to be the future was something you planned for and you would go to the future. Like, what's your plan to go get the future that you want? Now I feel like the future is just coming. It's just rushing in and you don't have any control over it. Changes in technology, changes in gender roles, demographic changes, geopolitical changes, and people are insecure. So the question is, are we going to turn to each other and realize we got the genius of every kind of human ever born in one country? We can figure it out. Or are we going to turn on each other and just start fighting like idiots? And you've got now a market both in media and in politics for the dividers. The dividers have a very simple thing. Just blame the other side, take no responsibility, and you can get a following. But the problem is you won't have a country if you keep doing that. And so we've got to figure out, okay, fine. Some stuff we're not going to agree on. We can fight about that stuff. But you got to start identifying stuff we can actually work on, like criminal justice, like education, like this addiction crisis, and get some progress somewhere, or we're going to be in deep trouble.
And there you go. You want to hear the entire thing. There's an hour worth of it. And just go to the podcast one and sign up, man. All right. Let's see. Titus is here. We'll bring him in 1 second. Let me say this. I was walking Phil today, and I noticed this. You guys tell me. When guys jog, they have a kind of poker face. It's a neither here nor there. Mm-hmm. Whatever's going on in their knees, their joints, their body, or I can't tell what mile they're on by their face.
Yeah.
It's a straight face. Women run, they grimace. Like, I see women run. It's like middle-aged women running all over my neighborhood, and they're in pain. Like, they hate every step.
Ladies,
they're,
be grimacing. They're,
I know. I'm like the white Dave Chappelle. Can't stop a woman from grimacing. But the women will let it show. Like, they, maybe it's a wiring. Like, look, I'm not happy about running either. I don't think anyone's happy about it. That face looks like they're doing what they're doing, and they're not happy about it. Guys just have that, I don't know, stoic? I don't know what it is. Notice that?
I have a theory, because I do agree with you. I see it on the Strand in the South Bay all the time. And not that I do a lot of jogging, because that would be very dangerous.
Sure.
But when I'm
passerby.
Thank you.
Right.
When I'm in sort of that mode, personally, and I think probably other women do this as well, you have a little bit of a scowl, or else there will be some sort of interaction that's uninvited.
Oh, really?
So you have kind of like a shitty face, just so you're kind of like, please, come on, I'm doing this.
She projected Adam as a potential threat, like to come up and kind of hit on her.
You're
like,
about to catcall the
horn dog.
Hell out of that 55-year-old woman.
I still tossed in a looking good, my lady. And she grimaced even more.
See, there it is.
Added to the list.
Maybe it's a good point. It's like the sort of the equivalent of the hot looking pharmaceutical rep who has to travel, who puts on the wedding ring to not be bothered.
I used to do that when I worked on Rodeo.
Right. You have to do that. A preemptive strike. Mm-hmm. And so women just kind of learn that if I'm wearing something tight and I got my sports bra on and I'm just going through the park and I'm when weirdos running up next to me, like the kids did in Rocky when he was running down the street and chat me up, I got to have this clothes for business look.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I think there's some projecting that a little bit.
Interesting.
Something to think about. Or their knee hurts, who knows?
I also think that women just have more expression, like when they're at the gym or when they're doing whatever. But that's interesting. I like that thought.
My thought was guys, when they work out or run or whatever, they're guys. They zone out. They're focusing on the run, whatever it is. Girls, being that they're women, they fixate on their whatever's on their mind.
Hair, nails, hair, and nails, brunch.
Yeah, whatever's on their mind. Their mind,
sewing.
Their mind wanders.
Cam Newton said
that's
sewing.
Right.
Yeah.
Not routes.
Well, also, too, maybe guys in the presence of another person flatten out their look a little more, mm-hmm. whereas women in the presence of another person ratchet up their look a little more. Be interesting to see what changed. Like, okay, you're jogging down the street, and now here comes another human being walking at you. You're aware that they're looking at mm-hmm. you. What would you like to convey, or what are you willing to convey, or what do you want to convey? Like, are we conveying, hey, I'm happy, or hey, I'm tired, right. or hey, I'm tough, like, or don't talk to me? You know, like, what are we conveying? Kind of interesting.
You cannot imagine how wrong you are.
Although there's been two occasions in the last couple of weeks, actually, in the South Bay where I go out when I'm power walking and I have the most pleasant fucking face on because two people yelled my name and said, oh, my God, I love the Ace Man. I love you, Gina. And I do not want to look like a bitch.
Oh.
So I got to have that pleasant demeanor, make everybody happy.
I like that. All right. Titus is out there. We're always excited to bring him in. We'll bring him in right after we talk about Blue Apron, man. This October, Blue Apron celebrating its fifth anniversary, bringing back its top recipes from the past 5 years. It's the all-star lineup. Try it out. And you can try out the all-time customer favorites by going to blueapron.com/Adam. How do they do that? Just all feedback and everything? Because I got my favorites.
Bison chili.
Buffalo chili. Yeah, man. That's one of my favorites. Less than $10 a meal. Takes 40 minutes or less. Delivery options to fit your every need. No weekly commitment. You only get deliveries when you want. And again, you will not be disappointed. I got to say, like, my first thing when I opened the box, I was a little skeptical. Like, how good is the meat going to be? How good are the vegetables going to be? Nothing's wilted. It's all fresh. It's all ready. And when it's done, it looks just like the glossy picture that comes in the box. And again, you make your own all-star lineup by pulling the ones you love aside. So you can check out this week's menu and get $30 off your first meal with free shipping. Mm-hmm. BlueApron.com/Adam. It's healthy. It's fun in the kitchen. It's a better way to go. BlueApron.com/Adam.
Hell yeah.
All right. Titus. We're always excited to see Chris Titus. He's in there. We'll play you a little good sports, and we'll be back with Titus right after.
Good sports. It's time for a sports segment. Good sports. It's time for Ace and Dave. Good sports. It's time to get it started. NFL highlights. Mixed martial arts fights. Riffing on bad Stallone movies. Raking the fruits of the talking, shooting jerks with blasters,
Podcast One Sports Network presents Good Sports.
Hi and hello, sports fans. Welcome to Podcast One Sports presentation of Good Sports. Dave Damashek here, Adam Carolla there, Ace. Let's continue our role, shall we, through the world of sports and beyond. Actually, we really like to use the framework of sports to tackle the game of life. Do you think that's a fair way to address it?
I think you using the word tackle is the most sports talk that's been on this show in the last 3 weeks.
You just laughed at me like Cam Newton laughed at that lady reporter. Shaq the Jew talking about sports. That's pretty ridiculous stuff. All right, let's talk
about
it.
I made a Cam Newton joke on stage at Irvine
last week. And how'd it go?
I got a good laugh. But
tell me
I
what it was. I'll be the judge.
Well, I said, I thought his statement was sort of close-minded and a little bit bigoted and, you know, sort of...
The initial statement.
Yeah, his statement. Not inclusive. And, you know, that's why the blacks shouldn't be allowed to be quarterbacks. I mean, they're on the main stage, and they're going to be asked tough questions, and you know they need to move in the
I liked his apology.
Position.
We've made fun of scripted apologies before. I don't know if you've seen what he then issued the next day in response to all the pushback he got from society. At least it felt sincere. He said, "Don't be like me. Be better than me." That was a terrible thing I said. I don't want that for my daughters and everything else. I hail it. Can we get back to people who have more import in our society who say ridiculous things instead of what the quarterback has to say?
I thoroughly agree. It's insane. And also, when you think about, like I was talking to Mike August about this, and I said, so you think about where Cam Newton comes from, you know, his background, what he's been through, what he's seen, how he grew up. Mike August said, when he left Florida, he had 28 speeding tickets that were like unpaid and threw somebody's computer out his window when people were banging on his dorm door because it was like a stolen computer. Like, we are getting on these guys because they use the entree fork to eat the salad. And we're all like, what? Come on. Why doesn't he know better? Why doesn't he know better? He's not from where we're from. It'd be nice if he knew better. It'd be nice if everyone knew better. But in a sense, and I don't know everything about Cam Newton, but I would, when these guys make these sort of decorum screw-ups, our new society decorum screw-ups, like things that would have been laughed off if Sonny Jurgensen had said it, or Billy Kilmer, or your own Terry Bradshaw, if anyone days of yore would have said this.
How about forget the athletes? Let me just go back, if I can, 15, 20 years. You and Kimmel were doing the Man Show. What was then excused as, all right, we're cracking wise in this environment. Now, just 15 years later, I kind of get that people are sort of like, oh, wait a sec. I mean, I'm not excusing comments like that, but it is sort of like, things have ramped up kind of quickly, you know? It's in one generation, what was acceptable no longer is. And I can see, you know,
but also,
word
athletes.
I'm not justifying it for the
record. Athletes are the furthest away from statesmen, you know?
That's right. This is
a big problem. They are paid for what they can do physically. And the folks, I mean, usually there's a chasm between what the guy can do physically, and then what he can do with his words. And, you know, you take the guys that are pretty darn good historically with the words, but you know, poets and you know, Truman Capote. But Truman Capote couldn't play forward for the Cavaliers, could he? I mean, you know, there's a space there. Now, we expect the guy, you know, the 265-pound quarterback who's going to shrug off the linebacker and then put his head down and push it in for pay dirt. We now expect that guy to be super thoughtful and eloquent when he's answering questions as well. That's not where he comes from.
Yeah, I won't even dive into the nuance of that moment, what the intent of his chuckle was. I'm not in his head. But yes, it's what makes me crazy, what gives me this low-grade anxiety all the time in my waking hours is the fact that is the the double standard, triple standard, whatever. Like, hasn't it been made clear in this last year that words don't matter anymore? Why are we getting so swept up in what the quarterback said? Yes, it was inappropriate, but the avalanche of outrage over this in a world when you can say things and then somebody else can say, that's not really what he meant. We can excuse what he said, well, but that's not what he was actually intending
also,
to say.
Also, if you... Here's to me the bigger problem is this, and I don't care because I'm just an atheist and we're going to move past everything and it doesn't matter. But here's the sad part: if you took a lot of the people who are on, a lot of the heroes, the social justice warriors that are on that are out tweeting and you know out in the social media, if you took those guys and you go, hey, the Madman Sniper from Vegas. That guy's, what do we give him, a 10 in terms of being a horrible human being? The guy killed 58 people, 10. What's Cam Newton? They'd be like eight and a half.
Forget comparing him to that extreme. What about the felons? What about people? I mean, what about people?
What about people just never pay taxes?
What are we talking about? This is not a felony. He said something. He is, as I always say, and I don't even necessarily apply this to Cam Newton, but I do say this all the time when a public figure who should know better doesn't apparently know better and says something. Free speech is great because it exposes the dumb opinions of dumb people. You want free speech. You do not want to tamp down free speech because it is the greatest highlighter on one's own terrible opinions.
I agree, and it's why, to take it one step further, Sheck, you want drunken speech.
That's right.
You want to be able to go to that Christmas party and have that secretary's a little bit sloppy say, I know you think that I'm cute because I see, and that's what she really thinks.
You'll never
get, even with free speech, you won't get that out
Wonder
of her.
Wonder Woman, we need your lasso. You know, Ace, we talked about it.
Beer-soaked lasso.
Like 12 years ago, we called for it, and society still has not answered our call for a flawless truth detector. I'd be all for it. I hook me up. Ask me whatever you want. The only ones who wouldn't want that are the people who are guilty. Right?
I agree.
Tell me what you really think about this subject. Yes, it would be great exposure. All right, we got off into some important social talk there.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this. Over-under it for me. We'll get to some more over-unders later in the week, but just as a little warm-up for you, we talked about music on Monday's Good Sports. Let's do it again here. Over-under, I love Led Zeppelin. Probably, in fact, I would say Led Zeppelin, number one for all of time. One band, who's the best? Led Zeppelin probably would be my answer. Kashmir is a song that doesn't really fit. It's incongruous with the rest of their music, in my opinion. I like it, but ultimately, when you make a list of the best Led Zeppelin songs, invariably, Kashmir people, like if you polled the world, Kashmir would be in everybody's probably top three or four or whatever. I mean, it's a little overrated. How say you?
You know, it's very big. It's symphonic, you know. And by the way, all those great rock songs that have that, you know, like Queen and stuff, they all sort of harken back to the symphony. You know, they have that big, rich, you know, sound versus In Excess, which is... I'd be the worst guy in the world. I'd be the worst girlfriend of an NXS band member because they'd bring me home tapes from the studio and they go, I want you to listen to the new album. And I'd go, the demo's strong. Now, when you guys get all the session musicians and up, you know, when you fill it out and they go, this is the finished product.
Well, no, we've polished it up.
This is the demo. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's a good skeleton of a song.
Let me paint a picture. No, we're
you,
done. With
you know,
it.
For a hot 23-year-old, I know a lot about building. You've got the house framed. Now we bring in the session musicians and we finish the house.
Yeah, well, we had like five different instruments in there and like Michael did his thing. So we're... That's it, mate.
This is it. This isn't a finished product, though. This is a...
No, that's it. Put it out, won't you?
This is just a
was
demo.
Was that an Australian?
Though. Yeah, sort
so
of.
So Kashmir, right. Over
Kashmir.
Under.
Kashmir is good, but I have a problem. P. Diddy. He sampled it. And people are so goddamn stupid where I go, first off, sampling is the opposite of creativity. It just... If you did it in... sitcoms, if you did it in stand-up comedy, like if I went, well, I'm just sampling George Carlin's bit about the seven dirty words. I'm not...
You're so right. You know what's crazy is, too...
If they did it in painting, if they did it in anything, if they did it in logos...
Dick Banks, the one-man house band, Dick Banks, who provides so much great music here and to my show and everything else, he is tethered to these laws about, like, well, that's a parody song and you can't use the original music to it, like... What? Because it's funny. That's out of bounds. But if it's a hip hop song, like creative, that they were able to use that same sound
Thing. I draw logos for a living, and then I show you my logo, and you go, "That looks like the Coca-Cola logo." And I went, "Yeah, I sampled it." But what do you think? You'd go, "But it looks like the Coca-Cola." Yeah. I sampled it because I like it. Now, what do you think of my logo? You'd go, well, that's not a logo. It's not your logo. It's so every time I talk to one of these fucking idiots and we talk about P. Diddy, and I go, look, he's not a musician. He's taking other. They go, I like that song. I go, you know, you like that. Ba-da-da. Yeah. Yep, that's not his part. That's somebody else did that. That's not his. You like the song. I have to explain to you that the part about the song, he says, yeah, that's his contribution. This part, the part you like, that's from another band from across the sea in a different time. Yeah, I like this song. It's like, are you that stupid? That's like, it's reptilian.
It's very, yeah, well, can we extend that then into hey, Tom Brady, guess what? Tom Brady wants to beat up Damashek. Why are you sleeping with Gisele Bündchen? Like, I'm just sampling her, man.
Sampling.
That's all. That's all. Get off my back, Brady. I'm just saying. I'm inspired by you.
BetDSI, 20 years plus of paying winners. A-plus rated on sportsbook review sites. I play there myself. I recommend BetDSI. Use your sports knowledge to make a little extra cash. Easy to use mobile playing interface. Play, win, get paid. That seems like a pretty easy equation to me. Odds on all things football, including live betting and props. Also, games that are already in action. Oh, I love that part. All the major sports, politics, reality TV shows, pretty much anything that has an outcome. You can use BetDSI with. Use the code GOOD25 for 25 free. That's right, $25 free to wager just by registering. I would do this if I were you. And if you decide to deposit, you get a 200% bonus match on your money. That's BetDSI.com. Promo code GOOD25. Get to $25 to wager and get started with the 200% extra bonus when you deposit. BetDSI.com. GOOD25.
All right, that's it for this edition of Good Sports, presented by Podcast One. For Adam Carolla, Dave Damashek, we'll talk to you tomorrow. Good Sports!
Hi there, my name is Susie Schuster.
And I'm Rich Eisen.
We're teaming up once again in the studio with our new podcast, Not Just Sports, with Susie Schuster and Rich Eisen.
So we're sportscasters and we're parents, so we're just going to be hanging out, talking sports and other stuff.
And I will try to educate you on all things in the NFL, because, of course, behind every great man is a greater woman.
That's correct.
There you go.
Join us every Wednesday exclusively on Podcast One Sports.
Subscribe today if you know it's good for you on Apple Podcasts or at PodcastOne.com or download it on the new Podcast One app.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Hey, I just discovered one of my friends had put a new bumper sticker on his car that said, "I heart my wife." I promptly told him that we could no longer hang out. Figured he'd be proud of me. Thanks.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
We is back with our friend, Chris Titus. Got a new movie out, special unit, available for pre-order now at Chris's site. Available on iTunes and Amazon. That is tomorrow. That's October 11, the website, ChristopherTitus.com. Congratulations, Chris Titus. This thing started in 06 when you did a pilot for Comedy Central that Bryan Cranston directed.
Bryan had just finished Malcolm in the Middle. We were kind of hanging out. Friends, we don't hang out anymore. He's super famous now. Now I can't. Now, there was no return phone calls. But that being said, Bryan's such a good dude. He directed it. And Comedy Central was one of those things where, like, executives, they went back and forth, yes, no, yes, no. And they finally said no. And the most screwed up story about this entire thing is I was in a Starbucks about 8 months after they said no. And there's a barista behind the counter, and they did a test audience with the thing, you know. And one of the quote, one of the things was, the guy that stutters, I think he stutters too much, and that was one of the notes in the test session. I'm at the Starbucks in fucking Van Nuys, and the woman goes, "Oh yeah, I saw that thing with the retards that you did," which she just said it, just threw it out like that. I was like, uh-huh. I said, "What'd you think?" And she goes, "Oh, you know, I wrote down that I didn't like the guy who stuttered. Here's your latte." And I remember, like, I'm so happy those counters are 5 feet high, because I wanted to just go over that counter. Really? The barista made a decision? Someone at Comedy Central who knows comedy, who works under a banner that says comedy, couldn't make that decision? Okay, we had to get the barista in, because they're comedy insider.
I feel like the reason we're having this renaissance of great TV and just sort of great material that's popping up is the Netflix and the Amazons and the everyone going, look, I sell bathroom scales and ship them for a living. That's like our business. So you go create the content, right, and we'll just write you a check to cover the expenses. And thus, boom, in the last like 3 years, yeah, some of the greatest stuff on TV all coming out of places, because they don't say, step aside, we know what we're doing. They just go, you're the artist, here's a check,
there's only
go couple, knock it out of the ballpark.
Yeah, there's only a couple of executives that were like that. Doug Herzog was like that, and John Landgraf was like that. There's a couple guys that have been like that for a while, but I think because now we all have digital cameras and we can all do it. Like, I ran a soundstage, you know, and we shot this movie ourselves. No one helped us with this. I had two investors. They were like, here's your money, like you did. By the way, I just want to know that, I just want to point out, the Hammer was a huge inspiration, because I figured if you could get that done, I could get this done.
If he can do
no,
it.
That's not what I meant. He's a psychopath. But I'm just saying that, like, I see Adam as a fellow comic. So if you could pull it off, I was like, all right, I can do it. Now, I don't have a garage with 3,500 cars and a radio studio, but I'm working on that. That's next.
Do you, how long did it take to shoot?
I worship you. Let's just say I have a shrine.
Oh, I got, boy.
Oh, boy. Certainly I'm worshiping false idols.
You know, the only,
right, the wrong guy.
The only chasm between me and Titus in the last few years has been, we both love cars, but I've been driving the Japanese cars and he drives the American cars. I think he's got a Dodge and a couple of Dodges in the movie. Yeah. But I drove,
which we wrecked. We flat out wrecked it.
Oh, God.
I bent it against the curb. I drove a C7R Corvette in a Trans Am race, and you are going to have a little pre-cum come out of you when you see that car, because that's American muscle.
And it'll run with almost anything.
Well, this one is 850 horsepower full cage.
I'm just talking the street one.
Oh, the street one. Yeah, but I'll get you. Gary will summon a picture of it, but then let's talk about the movie.
Yeah, I always love it when you actually stuff up my butt pretty much how many cool cars you've driven that I can't get into. Nice job. Thanks, Adam. I was
you,
still good about that.
All right, we'll get in a second. So the movie.
Yes.
I just love that you shot this thing with Cranston a decade ago.
Yep.
You didn't shoot. You shot a 22-minute version of it, and then you went, I'm going to make this movie, and you single-handedly just said, and you guys can probably guess, but it's pretty Herculean to do these things.
Oh, my God, it's Sisyphean.
And then when you get...
constantly pushing that boulder up a hill.
And then when you remove the budget part of it, when everything is, we got to find someone to let us use this. We need to find a location for free. I need people to act for free. Like when you then add, everyone needs to do everything for free, including you, then it turns into like undoable. Oh, there's a picture of the Corvette. In case you want to
I'm not even going to look, man. It's really irritating.
So
every time I
respect
cool,
it so much.
Thanks.
Well,
you helped.
Incredible. I let you use the
studio.
You guys
don't even know this guy. So Adam, and it's weird because you get to this place with the movie. You're like, I'm doing this movie. And people, everyone, your team is stoked because they're on the union. They're getting paid. We used the, you know, we did union actors and stuff. And so they're happy. And then you get to the place with production. You're like, I got to get it done. And I'm like, well, who? we need a radio studio. And I get on my list, and it's like, you got to ask for favors, and I'm not good at that. I'm not good at that, but you stepped right up. We actually totally destroyed the thing, and then we put it all back together, so no one even noticed. And thank you for letting us use that. We had people, they let us use a shooting range down, and they got in trouble. So these cops just go, yeah, dude, we just built a brand new shooting range. It was down in Orange County. Yeah, man, come in and use it. And I was like, okay. Next thing, we get a phone call. We got about 42 pieces of paper we got to fill out to even get you guys in on the shooting range, but we used it and it was great. So and it was a nightmare. There was especially directing, because everybody wants to know something.
Yes.
You know, from the craft service guy down to the lighting guy. And I got through it, but it was the best time I ever had, man. And the people were phenomenal and the actors were great. In fact, the you know, there is a lot of disabled actors in it. The real actors were more prima donnas than the disabled actors. Disabled actors didn't complain once. One time, Tobias Forrest, who plays a guy in the wheelchair, I go, dude, can you do a wheelie? We did a scene at a school. I go, I need you to do a wheelie. Go to the edge of the stage. Drop the wheels right on the edge of the stage. And he goes, he's a quad. He's a quad from the chest down. And he goes, okay, can I get a pad? I don't think I'm going to hurt my spine anymore. Right. But and I was like, oh, I forgot they were disabled. That's the weird thing, is working with disabled people, you it just went away. At one point, you were just like, all right, guys, I need you to do this. It was phenomenal.
Well, I got to say this. Brian and I were laughing about how, or lamenting how everything on IMDb is a 7.3 or something.
It's a fairly unreliable rating.
Every movie I've ever done, I've never cracked like 7.2. Mm-hmm. Titus,
it's only at a 6.5. Well, that's pretty terrible. Oh, it's a 7.9. Great. Best we ever made.
Titus 8.4.
Wow.
At IMDb right now. I was looking it up before I came in here.
Yeah. Damn. Maybe you'll do my podcast
IMDb.
One day.
I'd be more than happy to. It won the best comedy feature in the LA Film Awards, by the way, in 2017.
And Peter Farrelly got it. I want to give Peter Farrelly a shout out because I was at house one time. I didn't tell you the story, did I? Peter Farrelly got involved in the movie.
No.
We did the pilot, so Jackie Flynn's in the movie. Billy Gardell is ridiculously funny. Billy Gardell is out of his control.
Mike and Molly, he plays
the psycho captain, and he's 4 seconds from aneurysm the entire movie. And so I'm at my house one day, and my phone just goes. It says Pete Farrelly here. Can you call me? And my wife's across the counter. I'm like, Pete Farrelly's on my phone. And she goes, he can't hear you. So I call Pete Farrelly. He goes, hey, man. He goes, we use a lot of disabled actors in our stuff.
Yeah.
Right? He goes, I saw the pilot. The Jackie Flynn sent it to me. Can you send me the script? And I was like, and here's the thing. I don't like executives. I don't like anybody getting involved, because every time someone outside of the creative world has gotten involved, some guy who had a fucking – he got a degree from Miley. He's a lawyer. He comes in and he goes, hey, we're going to tell you what's funny. Every network show I've been on, it's always wrong. It's never great. But it's Peter Farrelly.
Sure.
Kingpin. Let's go down the list. Sent it to him instantly. Here you go. And 2 weeks later, he calls. He goes, hey, I read this. I like it. It's really funny. Now, the script was really Austin Powers early on. Peter Farrelly goes, can I give you notes? And I, of course. Now, again, I'm not one to take notes. I've been doing comedy 30 years. I'm not one. I've proved I know what's funny. But I was like, Peter Farrelly? Hell yes. Calls me in Denver. He goes, hey, man, so let's start. Page one. And he proceeds.
Are you sitting down?
Yeah, I was, man.
Get a pencil, put on some coffee.
I thought I was getting joke pitches. He torched, literally blowtorched the script. At one point, he pulled one thread that destroyed 65 pages of the script. Wow. Gone. Just gone. And we were already in pre-production, so I call the pre-production guy, Randy, and I go, hey, man, stop everything. Don't book any more of these. And he's like, he goes, right, you write that script in that same set. He was flipping out on me. So I rewrote the script. I just locked myself in a room for 2 weeks, took every single one of his notes, which were brilliant, wrote it again, sent it to him again, and he calls me back, and he goes, hey, man, really funny. And I go, great. He goes, can I give you notes? Fuck! So I'm sitting there again. I'm sitting there. I got the computer open. I'm just waiting for it. And he goes, all right, page 65. He gives me a joke pitch. Page 83, joke pitch. Gives me like 6 joke pitches. And I finally go at the end. I go, I'm not used to kindness. Let's just be honest in my life. So I go, why are you doing this? Do you want to be a producer? And he goes, no. He goes, we actually had some issues with The Ringer, and we didn't get it right. And he goes, I think you're really getting this right. So I wanted to make sure you did.
Yeah, The Ringer was Johnny Knoxville. Yeah. And he was like pretending so he could get into the Special Olympics or something. And it's such a weird, fine line that needs to be walked. And it's one... The problem with when you're making the films, especially when you're going for comedy, I think you can, I feel like with drama and with horror, you can kind of know where you're at in real time a little bit better. I think if, you know, somebody's tears are pouring down and they deliver a very emotional performance and the crew's crying or whatever. But when you're doing comedy, just doing take after take after take, right, and alternate, you lose it very quick. Like, is this going to be funny or is this going to be weird? And there's a weird thing to it too, which is also the difference between movies that work and the movies that don't work. I don't think you could tell if you were reading the jokes on the page. It's somehow there's some pixie dust or some rhythm to it or something. It can't be quantified. So you could make an entire movie with a bunch of really great people and a good script. And then at the end, it's like, I always say, you put all your favorite ingredients into one big kettle. And then at some point you take a draw off the ladle and you go, that's so good. That's where you're screwed. Yeah. There's nothing, there's no pulling out ingredients or pushing more in. It's just for some reason.
Well, yeah. Comedy, I got lucky though because of Titus, because we were doing it so fast that I learned that if it takes three takes to get it funny, it ain't funny. That's what you, especially if you have talented actors, if you get three or four takes and it doesn't work, I just stop. And then I come up with a new joke instantly.
How many days did Special Unit
23 take? 23 days, full
that's,
out.
It's about right. Yeah. I mean, for low budget, whatever, I think Hammer's 20 days or 19 days
and I switched,
something like that.
The Hammer was part of the reason this got done, man. I was really, but it was great. The worst moment was wrecking that car, man. The worst moment was like, Dodge gave us his car to use, and we were driving, and the stuntman comes in, and don't hire old stuntman. This guy did stunts for Dukes of Hazzard. Hire a young stuntman. You know, don't hire stuntman.
More you know.
Yeah, exactly. I love the guy. He worked on Titus, and he was great. That's why I hired him, because I'm like, you know, dude, you're always great, and you did all the stunts back in the 30s. And so he comes in.
I could go from the front of the stagecoach. That's right. I could do the Roman walk from the front all through a team. Through a six-horse team.
Walking
all the way
the whole time.
End up in the boot.
That's
and
right.
He comes in, and it was the last day of shooting. We had all this car stuff to do. We're going to save it because, you know, I thought, what if something happens to the car? Like Nostradamus, I said that. And the guy comes in, and he does a thing. And we had this kid, Jeremy, this cameraman, 23. Hire young camera people because they will do the stupidest shit you can possibly. They will put their bodies on the line. This kid put the camera on the curb, and there's the take we use in the movie. You see the bumper come by the camera. It's literally 6 inches from it. And this kid's head was right there. He would have had a camera embedded in his head. So after that take, I waited till we got the take, though. I said, hey, Jeremy, don't do that again. But I made sure we got the footage first. I gave him the lesson after we filmed it. So then, so I go, we move the camera to the other end, and I go, all right, Ted, let's do it again. He comes in, he hits, I don't know what happened, but as a car guy, when it hit the curb, and this is a brand new Dodge Charger.
It's funny, I was watching it.
Did you hear the kink noise?
I was watching it as a car guy, but as a guy who makes cheap independent films, and I was thinking, they couldn't have wanted to bend the axles that way. Like, as far as the script goes, there's nothing in it. I figured you wrote around it a little bit, but it's like, get cars, and why would they bend the axles that way?
I put all my money into car wrecks. That's when I do my movies. Gone in 60 Seconds, the original one, was my first movie. And he comes in, and we hear, kink, and the car hits the curb, and I knew. Dodge Charger got an independent rear suspension, so I knew it was gone. It was just gone. And I had my walkie-talkie, and I just threw it, and I walked a mile away from the set. I didn't know what to do, because all I keep thinking is, Dodge is going to kill us. And I walk back, and I check on the stuntman, and we had this French script supervisor, and she comes over to me, and she goes, I want to tell you something. Listen to me. I know that you are upset right now. You do not want to hear this, but...
but...
Your character is a drunk asshole, and he has wrecked a car drunkly, and maybe you should write something for this. We will use this.
Yes,
and I looked at her and I went, you know what? I hate you, and I love you for that. And so I wrote something real quick, and we use it in the movie, and it really adds to the character. And it's production value that pissed off my insurance people so bad. That was a bad argument.
Special Unit. Available for pre-order now on Chris's site, and then available on iTunes and Amazon tomorrow. That is October 11th. All right, Chris, hang
out. Thanks for watching it, by the way.
Oh, my pleasure, man.
And the school, there's a funny school shooting in it, which is...
I mean, the thing about the movie is...
timely.
There's material. I could see why certain producers might shy away from it.
Yeah, but some distributors are like, how are we going to promote this thing where actually they show up and they stop a school shooting with kids around? Yeah. It's funny, though.
Yeah.
Right?
Watch it. I will.
Thanks, man.
I will tell people. Oh, speaking of cars, True Car, man, True Car. Can buy and sell new, used, True Car, man. Over 700 pre-ordered vehicles, pre-owned, I should say, vehicles from over 13,000 True Car certified dealers nationwide. So whether you're looking to go new or whether you're looking to go used, you get upfront pricing, you get info, you get discounts. Maybe you get that Dodge that it's got a little limp to it because Titus put it into the curb over there. That'd be used, but I'm sure it'd get all patched up and certified. And you see what others pay for the exact same car you want. Get a fair price. Then you connect with the local certified dealer. Enjoy a quick, easy buying experience. New or used, you go with True Car. When you're ready to buy, you just pop on your computer, type in True Car, and pick up your certificate. Get the car you want, go to the certified dealer. It's already locked in. Give them the certificate, pick up the car. No haggling, no hassles. It's True Car. Some features not available in all states. All right, Titus, hang out. We'll do news.
Okay.
And you crack wise.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral. All those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gina Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Deep news with Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
Well, ESPN reports that more than 20 players on the 49ers took a knee during the national anthem before their game with the Indianapolis Colts on Sunday. Vice President Mike Pence, who attended the game, responded with his own protest by walking out. The Colts also staged a peaceful protest wearing black T-shirts with, quote, "We Will" on the front and "Stand for Equality, Justice, Unity, Respect, Dialogue, Opportunity" on the back. They stood with their arms locked with their fellow teammates during the anthem. Trump posted after the walkout, quote, "I asked VP Pence to leave the stadium if any players kneel, disrespecting our country. I am proud of him and Second Lady Karen." Meanwhile, 49ers safety Eric Reed thought Pence walking out may have been more for a show. This was his quote.
Until Cole's game 3 years ago. So this looks like a PR stunt to me. He knew our team has had the most players protest. He knew that we were probably going to do it again. And so this is what systemic oppression looks like. A man with power
systemic
comes to the game,
oppression.
Tweets okay. A couple things out, and leaves the game.
All right, systemic oppression.
With an attempt to okay.
Systemic oppression. Please, can we please stop that? You're poisoning every young person's brain with systemic oppression. You can talk about things to change, things to do better. It's not systemic oppression. That does not exist here in 2017. Please stop poisoning every young mind.
And not
in
pro football. It doesn't exist in pro football, actually.
Systemic no, pro football.
No, it does not
pro football
exist
is exactly how most people want money. Owners are rich. They want to win games, and they will start the best 11. There are many teams in the league that have all 11 defensive players are black. White coach, white owner, white everything. Those are the best 11 players they can put on the field.
Shows the system's working for the black man in that situation.
It shows what the system wants is success.
Right.
The system doesn't go, well, yeah, but we got that one ginger over there. Let's just put him at free safety.
Yeah, me,
the
and system Bill, wants, me and Bill Burr have not been asked to play on any professional football team.
The system wants success. Now, you can say, we got things in this country we want to fix or work on or make better. I'm all for that. I don't like the systemic oppression. It doesn't exist. It does not exist.
The problem is this. It's just a simple freedom of speech issue. I think that the vice president was a bit of a douche by walking out. It's obviously a thing. Hey, if you don't read the Constitution first and then walk out, they're just, you know, if someone says
no, he's
right,
making, it's right. It's a ploy. I mean,
right,
he's doing a,
right.
He's Stop. Making a statement. They made a statement. He's making a
right.
statement. That's,
and I guess
I think
we let him do that too. That's his freedom of speech. But don't get, he's using his freedom of speech to make fun of others' freedom of speech. I get into a weird kind of like wormhole thing, and it's circular, and I just think I'm going to, you know, cause a time-space continuum rip at one point.
Be nice. It's just officially on, and it's kind of a Hatfields and McCoys thing now. Like, we're not even, no one's interested in who started it who fired the first shot or whatever. It's just on.
Isn't it most ridiculous that it's our vice president who's engaging in this? Like, the most infuriating thing about all this, it's such small dick, like, oh, yeah, well, I'll show you. And it's such a stunt, and it's so transparent. It's like,
well, and
why?
It started by
one of the smartest things you ever said, big to small, work big to small. How does this fit in any of the events?
Right.
This is the most insignificant significant. This has nothing to do with you.
Well, and it started before that with Trump saying, I asked VP Pence to leave.
Big
the stadium.
To small. Yeah. Well, they all got on board with
so
that.
I agree.
So he yanked on the choke collar. Trump yanked on the choke collar a little bit. So like, hey, get
out. But still, the whole thing is based on a lie. The whole knee thing is based on a lie.
Sure,
the cops are shooting black people.
Sure. Then why insert yourself? Why even bother?
I agree.
I don't know if I agree with that. I mean, it seems to be a little bit prevalent that unarmed people got shot for like a, there was a short period of time.
Statistically, there's no difference.
Statistically, really?
Statistically. But that's not the narrative. That's not the narrative. These, me and Bonaducci got together and we crunched some numbers.
Are you satisfied now?
Yeah, now if Bonaducci
when we left that sweat lodge, we had not only pretty good buzz going.
A couple of bedazzles.
Danny had a good pump going, and we arrived at some conclusions.
Yeah.
So, yes, no, it's not, but it seems that way, because that's
by
the number. That's
Pence, by
the
way, the
narrative.
Should not be doing what Donald Trump does, because it's really not working out for Trump. If you look at the popularity thing, it's not working out. Don't copy that guy, because you're going to be in the job in about 3 months. So just don't do the same shit he does. Just don't.
Maybe Trump called him and said, stay by all means, and he's defiantly doing this.
Stick as a man.
Yeah, man.
Do you have, speaking of football, do we have the end zone shot of that snap going back? All right, this drives me nuts. Look how bad these long, I could get drunk, go in the hall, and do 10 shotgun snaps in a row that would be 1,000 times better than what the professional guys are doing. Brian, you understand this. Why? Look, all right, watch it. Watch the play again. Watch the ball float back and be low and slow.
Hit him in the chest with it so he can get it up to his...
It's down on his knees, and it's floating back. It's not spiraling. It's not... You can snap it and put a spin on it and put it in his chest.
Also, in that shot, which was a very bad snap, he's getting his lunch.
Right.
He's getting his lunch eaten by the Dallas defensive line. I think he's having trouble. I wonder if he's like preoccupied with the rush that's about to come.
But he's everything. I get it, but he's a professional in the NFL who's got to learn to do this snap. Aaron Rodgers got crunched by a 300-pound dude because he had to take a floating ball off of his shins. Snap it back. And look, I don't care that this happens. I care that today's a practice day and it's not being discussed. Mm-hmm. I want it worked on. I want to pull it aside and just work on this after practice for an hour.
We're all watching film today, except for you.
I think the rule is don't hit on the center's girlfriend if you're the quarterback. I think that's the rule.
A lot of backstory.
Let's
see where that started.
Well, a video of an offensive line coach snorting an unknown white substance has gone viral. That happened Sunday night, according to Mediaite. In the video, Chris Forrester, are you familiar of Miami Dolphins?
No one knows who
he is. He's seen talking to the camera, saying he's about to head into a meeting, snorting a few lines with a white powdery substance with a rolled up $20 bill. Sources say the Miami Dolphins have launched its own investigation into the video, and a decision about Forrester's fate with the team could be made as early as today. Here's a bit of the video.
Well, it can't be coke. It's Miami. I mean, where are you going to find coke?
Right, yes,
you know, and it's got to be something else.
Yeah. Here we go.
Hey, babe. Miss you. Thinking about you.
Oh, he's taping himself.
Wow, it's romantic.
Yeah. He's doing a little love letter.
Before I go.
I thought he's doing a blow selfie. This is weird.
Nice.
There's those big grains falling, but I miss you. I miss you a lot.
Who do you think he's talking to?
This lady.
Ryan Tannehill.
Stripper.
Holy shit.
He's looking pretty beaky.
Yeah, right?
Mm-hmm. No, but it's going to be a while before we do this.
Pretty good himself, like,
I know you're going to keep that baby.
Trump should really exacerbate things by weighing in and say, no harm, no foul. Now, if it was crack, that'd be a different situation.
Did he say, I know you're going to keep that baby? Oh. See, at the practice field on Tuesday.
I have this theory that when people want out, they do stuff like this.
Yeah.
Like, I believe people do things that they don't even know they're doing. Or like if you said to them, would you like to keep your job? They go, absolutely. But then why are you videotaping yourself doing coke and putting it out on the internet?
Did he put
and
it
like,
out or someone found it? What happened?
Either
is that vengeance? Does he have an ex-wife? What
it doesn't
this?
Matter. Like there's a part where you do this, like that move where you get really drunk at the Christmas party and decide to tell the boss everything you think of him. You may be sober on Monday and go, oh, my God, what did I do? But I believe there's a part of you that wants out. Mm. Like there's some part of you that is motivated have too many and then go settle the boss's hash. And you can go, I'm horrified that I lost my job. But it's like, there's a part of you that wants out. Like, and there's a part of all of us, I think, that are self-destructive. And so, for some people, it rules their life. Like, you can just see Chris Dice got his hand up.
Oh, you know some people, Chris?
Oh, no. You guys remember, I had a TV show that was rocking it, and at a meeting with the network president and 30 of her flunkies, I basically told her to suck it. So, yeah. So, I'm thinking, I get it. I wish I got this speech before that. Because now I get it, and
well,
thank you.
There's the one where the cops all have their guns drawn, and the guy's got his shirt off, and he's flapping his arms, screaming, what I do. And the cops are yelling, lay on your face. And he keeps walking, flapping his arms, yelling, what's happening? That's a really crude sort of your reptilian brain takes over. But I see it on like a white collar level, too, where people just destruct. They do things they didn't have to do, which is totally different. See, here's the difference.
It's what Trump's doing.
Yeah.
Every day. Here's three times a fucking day. He's
doing it. If there's something in it. Yeah. See, it's like a tweet. You don't need to tweet. So here's what I'm saying. There are people at work, and they work at a supermarket, and there's a high-end bottle of scotch like on the back shelf, and they're working stocking Friday night, and they're punching out at 4 in the morning. They go, all right, I'm going to steal this bottle. But it gets picked up on the camera, and then they get called in, and they get fired. Okay.
But the camera he mounted. The guy who told the scotch actually put the cameras up.
But that guy's trying something.
Right.
But now there's surveillance footage of you holding the bottle of scotch and just smashing it on the ground. That's the guy who really wants out. Right. Like, there's nothing, anything in it for him. Right. There's nothing in it for you. You don't have to film yourself doing coke.
Yeah, Gary said allegedly was leaked by the stripper that he sent it to.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
And he says in there, hey, baby, remember how high we used to get?
You can't trust a stripper.
No.
And by that, he was trying to get back in that relationship. I see that, and I disagree. When it comes to women, when it comes to getting laid, there's a lot of guys will do stupid shit, not thinking they're getting fired. They just want to get laid. And if the way he was talking, I think he just wanted to get laid by a stripper.
Mm-hmm. Now, the fun part is when he denies that it's cocaine. Right? Because that's going to be the fun part.
Adderall.
You guys don't recognize Brewer's yeast? You don't? Not at all?
No. I.
Or confectioner's yeast. I can't remember which one
it was.
Use.
It's not important what it was. Baby powder.
Yeah. Oh, no. I was trying to fool her. Yeah, but that not for me. Not for the meeting. Also, I don't know, offensive line coach getting a little beaked up.
Yeah, between that or strength and conditioning coach, the guys you want getting big time.
Well, I mean, everybody.
You guys are justifying it.
Well, okay.
Let's go. No, I'm in.
Let's picture Ray Lewis when he would enter the end zone. Show Ray Lewis. Show Gina Grad what Ray Lewis would do pregame
his
in the end zone.
Yeah.
And I would say that seems like the guy was pretty whipped up. A little higher on something than life, or so be it. If they could bottle whatever Ray Lewis was on, I'd give it a toot.
They did. It was deer antler spray.
Let's go back to the Stabler Raiders, man. All those guys, all the time, man.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a different. It's just a different era now.
They.
I miss those days.
I miss those days too. We'll look for that. First, I'll tell you about LegalZoom, man. As a business owner, it's important to keep moving forward, but things come up. Take your time. Take your focus. When it comes to reviewing contracts, registering trademarks, or staying current on fees and permits, LegalZoom.com can help. Created by, it's been 16 years. That's right. They've been around for 16 years ago by the brightest minds in law technology. Helped more than 2 million businesses over the 16 years to navigate the legal system with confidence. Never worry about billable hours. Oh, Gergis loves the billable hours piling up. LegalZoom, not a law firm. You get the answers to your business questions at fixed rates. That's what you get, fixed rates, a la carte, no billable hours. Through LegalZoom's nationwide network of independent attorneys, it's LegalZoom. Dawson.
Take some pressure off yourself. Go to LegalZoom.com now to take care of your business before the year winds down. For special savings, be sure to enter Adam in the referral box at checkout. That's code Adam for special savings only at LegalZoom.com. LegalZoom.com.
All right. See Ray Lewis.
This is how Ray Lewis, Hall of Famer, would enter the game.
All right.
Tell him if it didn't look like that man's high on something.
Holy
All right,
crap.
That's energy. You
He's
want,
fun.
You want energy. You want fired so up. You want this whipped up.
Yeah, that's this year he also did the halftime show. He was really, really, really amped.
He was actually mad at the field. He would grab clumps of grass and throw. He'd throw clumps of grass at and
right.
reach in and grab the sawed up off wow. the field.
He also killed a dude.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. We may have been.
Yeah,
he was there.
Stabler. I kind of feel like that should have been the headline.
Mm-hmm. And the Raiders actually, because I was a Northern California boy, the Raiders, there was at this point, it was in the 70s, there was a drunk driving accident near the Delta in Sacramento. They killed a guy and they played the next Sunday. They ran over a dude. They had a Porsche. They wrecked a Porsche, killed a guy, and they were playing the next Sunday.
That's commitment.
Commitment
to excellence.
Yeah. Commitment to excellence.
I remember Otis Sistrunk saying, "We want Chappaquiddick on his ass."
Deep pull for Otis.
Otis. You remember Otis Sistrunk?
Oh, man.
That is the greatest. He's the blackest man on the planet. I argue you can't find blacker. Now, you got to understand, bald was a big deal in the 70s. Mm-hmm. Now it's commonplace.
Sure.
Michael Jordan and all the athletes, everyone's bald.
All the
guys. And plenty of black bald dudes.
All the greats, nice.
They didn't have black and bald back in the day.
Right.
And Otis was black and bald. Mm. And it was the most man.
Yeah.
I think, oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, what's his name?
Oh, man, that voice is good, man.
It's good.
You should talk to, what is it, Barry White? No, wait a minute.
Oh, come
no,
on.
Willie Jello Johnson, man, he back.
No.
Yeah, Isaac Hayes, sorry. Yeah, Willie, talk to Isaac.
That's good.
Now, how you doing, brother, man? You looking good.
It's good.
Yeah, all right, man, always good. Keep it good, right?
It's a good thing.
Yeah, it is a good thing. It'll be better later, though. It's good now, going to be great.
Sometimes.
Oh, well, sometime. Well, sometime, man. You know why? Because sometimes bitches get in your way.
What?
You heard me.
Yeah.
It's going to asphyxiate.
Oh, look at Otis Sistrunk. I say the blackest man on the planet.
Wow.
You can't go blacker than Otis Sistrunk.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, Isaac. I mean, you had the vest of chainmail. That helped. But Otis Sistrunk. Come on. Okay. I mean, maybe a tie. I don't know.
No.
Yo, no, he got the Pulitzer for being black.
Willie, can you be blacker than Otis Sistrunk? You could tie. You can't be black.
No, man. That's no. You know, there's a level you got to get to, man. That's the blackest of the black.
Yeah.
You know, actually, what Universal would just fall into his head at times that he was so black. They would just get sucked into him while he was on the field. And that's why he was good, man.
What?
Yeah, well, Isaac, look, there's no shame in being top five blackest of all time.
No.
Well, you can't dethrone Otis.
No.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You can't dethrone the man.
He's, no.
Well, I mean, he's just the blackest brother in the world.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Okay. You two could have been the two famous blackest, baldest people of the 70s.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. All right, let's do one more.
All right, well, while we're on the subject, Radar Online reports that O.J. Simpson is out of prison and looking for companionship. Apparently, he's reached out to the Bunny Ranch in Nevada and asked for a prostitute that looks like Nicole Brown.
No, that's not true.
According to Bunny Ranch owner Dennis Hoff, one of O.J.'s buddies.
Of course, Dennis Hoff.
In terms of just...
Let me tell you guys a story you won't believe.
In terms of just describing the person... everyone wants a prostitute that looks like her.
That's actually really good.
That's valid.
Yeah,
valid.
That's she's the number one archetype. She's a prototype for a prostitute.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And robot prostitutes.
And
actually.
Most guys who toted the rock in the league would like to have that.
Yeah.
Who are you going? Cheryl from Good Times? Like, I want hair that goes up. I don't like the hair that comes down. I like the hair that comes up.
Nina Simone, but more Nina Simone.
Right.
So according to Dennis Hoff, one of OJ's buddies, will visit the legal brothel to handpick the woman likely to meet the juice's criteria, namely tall, blonde, Caucasian. Wow. Hoff added, quote, "Then we're all going to get together and hang out and party a little bit, have some fun with some gorgeous company. The Bunny Ranch and the Bunny Ranch girls are anxious for OJ's visit." Meanwhile, reports came out a while back that some women at the Bunny Ranch said they would actually quit if Simpson accepted Hoff's job offer to come hang out there full time.
I realize you go there, you make a whole day of it, right? You have a big steak dinner. You have some cocktails.
Yeah.
It's going to be funny with OJ. Like, it's kind of hard to cut this steak with two forks. Would you like a third fork? No, not a third. A spork, then.
Yeah.
Well, I'll give you a spoon. Garcon, give him a spoon.
We have the finest spoon in all of them, Henderson.
Spoons.
This is like the Raging Bull thing where he's greeting people at the end, except OJ's got to do it at the Bunny Ranch. That's what they want him to do. That's just a horrible.
It was offered.
Yeah. My life worked out.
The Bunny Ranch, and then ultimately porn. The door is always open for porn. Like, but let's face it. What do you think? All right, let's write it down. Let's write it down.
Okay.
OJ is willing to do porn, and they can get a Nicole Brown type to do the porn.
That's all there is in porn.
That's right. All right, he's willing to do porn. Some entrepreneurial porn guy is going to cut him a check. Now, the thing about porn is you don't really care about your reputation, per se.
Far from it.
Now, when you're the problem with CBS News or 60 Minutes or 2020 or whatever it is, they would happily pay OJ 50 grand for a sit-down interview, but they go, we don't pay.
Right.
We're a legitimate news outlet. We don't do this. So they have to pretend. They'd love it if someone could magically give them 50 grand and they'd sit down and talk to them and they wouldn't know about it. But they just can't let it get out there. But if you're porn, doesn't matter.
Sky's the limit.
Right. So let's write down the number and then make an argument for our number in terms of what OJ could get for porn.
I'm already writing the movie.
You got juice.
Oh, baby, the juice about to be loose. Keep it up.
All right, and
sometimes
give it to one of the Farleys to punch up.
Yeah, page one.
That'd be
all right. Everyone got their number?
Yeah.
I got 250K.
What's the reasoning?
Reasoning is it's gonna.
That's sequel money.
It'll be the biggest. It'll be the biggest thing in the news for like 3 days.
Absolutely.
Like it'll be the biggest news when it's announced. Mm-hmm. It'll be the biggest news when it drops. And everyone's going to get on Twitter. Everyone's going to weigh in. Yeah. Everyone's going to go nuts. This is an outrage. Everyone, and it's going to divide everyone. Everyone's going to be arguing about it left and right.
The president might tweet about it.
Yeah. Everybody's going to have to feign outrage over it. Everyone in Hollywood's going to have to weigh in. The NFL's going to. It's just be everywhere.
Every comedian will have a joke. Every late night host.
And then when it comes out, I just believe that many people for 250 grand is well worth it.
I've already pre-ordered, actually. I'd say I have to be a million because of that, because I actually believe even Pence would actually download it just to see. There'd be too much people going, I got to see what he's doing.
He's a million.
He's 77. Let's see how much he has left.
He's 70.
70, really?
Well, by the time the porno comes out.
For
all those reasons, I agree with everything you said. I also went with a million, which is maybe a uncreative round number, but I think this money would come in from maybe Middle East, kind of oil money. Like, this is nothing to them. This is nothing. And this number's, it's just an easy headline number. You know, blah blah blah.
$1 million.
Vivid Entertainment or whatever it is offers OJ $1 million for porno.
I actually split the difference on you guys. I said $500,000 because I think he would hold out. If somebody said $250,000, I think his gigantic ego would never allow himself to accept such a pittance.
Anyone's
so I think
good production
would have to
value.
Start.
Oh, we'd have to have
million.
The scene where the condom didn't fit.
No, oh,
he just sold his hands up like, "Hey, man, you better go get a Magnum."
They got to bring in.
They
got to
bring in one of those. They got to bring in one of those balloons that people get into to put it on.
Right. Gary Dawson.
I had the number at a million, but I think that my actual number is closer to zero because I don't think he's going to do anything that's this publicized, because then the Goldmans are just going to take all the money. I think all of his financial.
All right, but you can't think that.
Yeah,
right.
I put a million. If
a million?
That's the number.
All right,
yeah, seven figures.
I'm going to go the opposite way, as I'm apt to do, and say that OJ will pay them a
to
dollar.
To do the porn.
$1.
$1.
To do the porn.
Honestly, it looks like
all
Nicole.
Right. All right, let's do one more.
You got it. Well, let's just stay on the football theme then, end on a happy note. Tom Petty tributes have been pouring in the last week. Jason Aldean singing Won't Back Down on SNL. John Fogerty and Coldplay both paid tributes at their shows. Bryan Adams, Miley Cyrus, they posted their versions of Petty songs online. And another kind of public tribute to Petty took place at the University of Florida Gators football game versus LSU.
Hold on, Titus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should do that. Like, we go, hey, The great George Carlin's going to be missed, and for that, I'm going to do 20 minutes of his material.
Yes.
And I have to dip into my own stuff, and ain't no, and it's good stuff, tried and true. I listened to the album a few times on the ride in, and I got it down.
I did my George Burns thing. I did my tribute.
It's yeah, what if we just picked all the comedians who've died before us?
This next one's a cover by one of the greats. There are seven words you can't say on TV.
So this happened in Gainesville.
Why is it the cool? It's why you want to get into music and you don't want to get into comedy. As we say all the time, like, you know, you come back to town, it's a constant, oh boy, what did we do last time we were in Chicago? Good, we can't do that again, right? But of course, with bands, play the hits.
You got to play the hits.
Well, you not only get to play your hits, you get to play other people's hits.
Right. Cover jokes.
I have to write a new show every 18 months or else the club's not full again. So it's like I can't come in and just, you know, I have no Thunder Road that I can just end with every show.
Right. You can't go, hey, I got a very dear friend named Mike Birbiglia. He does a 12-minute thing on airport food.
Sleepwalking.
Here big we go. Ups, two, big, three, four.
Big ups to Big. Listen, here we go.
Right. But if any time you go see a band and they break into a Who song, you love it. Or Led Zeppelin song. Or Beatles song, you're loving it.
And if it's a comic that does it, literally a phone call start, and by 2 days later, every comic's threatening to kill that guy.
Thief.
And just, thief, tearing him out. Yeah.
Yep. So this time was a little different. Petty is beloved. Everybody loves his music. And the entire crowd stood up and sang along when it was played over the PA system. It was a pretty cool moment. Here's a little clip of that. 90,000 people.
Wow.
This is the Florida game?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he wrote those anthems. Smart.
Yeah, man.
All right, let's bring it home.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Gina Grad.
That was the news with Gina Grad.
LifeLock, man, a month ago. Equifax, they had a breach, man, and if you were among the millions affected, your info may already have been out there for months. Thieves can buy your info on the dark web, use it to open new accounts, commit crimes, even steal from your 401k. Now, you got to get some protection. Let's go with LifeLock. I've got it. Lynette has it. The kids have it. Why would you have anything else? It's 2017, people. Let's get some identity protection. You're out there. You're on the internet. You're shopping. Your information, your digital footprint, it's all out there. And it's all good because you get to buy everything online. But you got your identity out there. Let's take care of ourselves. Their proprietary technology detects a wide range of identity threats and alerts you if someone is using it. If there's a problem, their U.S.-based identity restoration specialists will work to fix it. They're the best. They're LifeLock. Dawson.
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock can help you see more threats to your identity. Go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK. Use promo code Adam. That's Adam for 10% off your LifeLock membership. Visit LifeLock.com and save 10% now.
Also, if you have an ex-wife.
And, we didn't even get into it. Nashville.
Don't start, man.
I'll see you in Nashville at the Polk Theater Saturday night and then Minneapolis on Friday night as well at the Music Hall. Titus got live shows all over the place, too.
Oxnard Improv this week.
Oxnard Improv, Levity Live. We're coming out there and doing a live podcast.
Great club.
Love that place. And that's coming up on the 12th, November 12th. And we got live shows everywhere. Just go to AdamCarolla.com. Go to Corolla Drinks. Say hi to Lynette. Go check out Special Unit. This thing is over a decade in the making. It is a labor of love. God bless Chris Titus.
What is your little review of it? What did you say? What did you think?
I thought it was great. I can't believe that you actually accomplished it. Like, I was just like, all right, go at it. And it was just... It just made me feel good. Like, I was just glad. It was funny as hell, but I was also just glad to see that this thing we talked about, so we saw...
Since I met you, I think.
You brought the pilot over to my old house in Hollywood about 10 years ago, and we watched the Comedy Central pilot of it like a decade ago. So I was, as my Pop Warner football coach said to me once, tickled pink that this thing was finally in the can. ChristopherTitus.com
Thanks,
is
man.
Where you go, and it's available for pre-order now on Chris's site, and then iTunes and Amazon as well, October 11th. Also, Van Jones. Yeah, Beyond the Messy Truth. Check that out as well. Until next time, Adam Crawford, Chris Titus, Van Jones, Gina Grad, and Bald Brian saying mahalo.
Hell yeah.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on the Twitter at Adam Carolla. Leave us a voicemail if you like. The phone number is 888-634-1744. Subscribe to Take a Knee. Do that by signing up for a Podcast One Premium. Just click the link at adamcarolla.com. The Ace Man in Minneapolis Friday night. Nashville Saturday. Get your tickets now at adamcarolla.com.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.